T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Here's Campbell handing on to Kane again. Lots of head fakes there, trying to shake Demon. Threw one in front. Oh, my, it rattled around, and it kicked on back, and it scored! We saw no light, we saw no signal, and we're not sure if they've set a signal of a goal yet, but they are celebrating at the other end of the ice. What chaos! Word has gotten to the Blackhawks what you have just seen. One of the more unusual finishes, but it's a goal. The Stanley Cup to the Chicago Blackhawks.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Eddie Olczyk joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Wow, 10 years ago today, the goal that only Patrick Kane saw. Just a remarkable goal. Eddie, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Eddie.
Hey, Molly. Hey, David. Nice to be with you guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Can you believe it's 10 years? It just seems like that is a blink of an eye.
Yeah, a lot is going on in the last 10 years. And considering Molly and you and David know this as well as anybody in our town, considering where this franchise was prior to this incredible run here, the team of the decade, by the way, in the National Hockey League, over the course of the last 10 years to win their first cup, and to not know that they were on the verge of winning a couple of more. And, you know, I get this question a lot is, you know, the three cup teams, you know, which one, you know, do I think was the best team? And I'll be honest with you, I thought that first cup team was the cream of the crop because of their ability to be able to really play any way that you wanted. If you wanted to play a skilled game, well, you know, you had Kaner there. If you wanted to play a grind them out, dump it in, dump and chase type of game, you had your guys like, you know, Brouwer and Bolin and Johnny could do that. You had incredible defensemen in Seabrook and Duncan Keith. And then if you wanted to go ahead and drop the gloves or, run people into the fifth or sixth row, you had Dustin Byfuglien and Ben Eager. So to me, that was that team, and I didn't even mention Andrew Ladd as well, another big body. So to me, I thought that team had a chance to, you know, really go on a run and win, you know, a couple of cups with Joel Quenneville behind the bench and those guys just kind of coming into their prime. But, that team was kind of torn apart there shortly after, and you know they had to wait another couple of years. But yeah, it's hard to believe it's been 10 years, and what a way to end it there. And as you guys said, only Patrick Kane knew that puck had got buried in behind the net.
It's like picking your favorite kid, Eddie, which of the cup champions was the best. And going back to that night, so you're 4 minutes 6 seconds into overtime. Kaner said he knew right away. What do you recall about that moment, and when did you know that was, you know, it slithered under Michael Layton's glove? It just, everything was there, and then you, all of a sudden he's celebrating, and that's the only sign that he scored, right? Was his celebration.
Yeah, I think, David, right before that too is, you know, Brian Campbell made a heck of a play out near the blue line to hold on to the puck and not just, you know, fire it up, you know, fire it into the corner and make it a 50-50 puck. He made a nice little move up high, And then Kaner found some spacing there, and then he went right down the wall. And is great players do in all sports. They're just able to make plays when most people wouldn't think about making a play, and to see it go in. Now, look, I looked at that in a couple of different fashions. One is, a Chicago guy, a guy that had played for the Blackhawks and always had dreamed about what it would be like to see my favorite team win a Stanley Cup in my hometown. And I wasn't able to accomplish that in the 5 years that I played for the Blackhawks. But, you know, to see the reaction and then the delayed reaction and looking at the bench and, you know, and then finally, them getting the stamp of approval that, yeah, the puck was in the back of the net. It was just, you know, so many thoughts. And then again, I'm sitting on the broadcast with Doc Emrick, and we're trying to describe what the hell just happened. And so there are a lot of things, you know, kind of going through my mind on a, you know, I guess on a personal and a selfish level. But it was just unbelievable to see what had happened, and then, you know, coming back and seeing how the city just embraced this franchise. And you guys know this, and I try to explain this to, you know, to my, I don't call them kids, my humans, because they're older, but you know, I tell them, say, look at, like, you may not believe me, but at one point, you know, the Blackhawks were as big as a team in this town there was. I mean, that was factual. And, you know, they went on hard times, and, you know, it was tough to get people in the building, but, you know, Rocky just turned everything around, and with John McDonough and the whole organization, and all of a sudden you see a Stanley Cup, and then you get, you know, a couple of million people at a parade, and everybody's talking hockey. And it was just, it was great for the game. I think it was great for the young people of our city to be able to, you know, see this game at a different level and a different light. And it was certainly fun to be a very small part of it on the broadcast.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. It was just extraordinary, and it led to this unbelievable time in Blackhawks history. I mean, you think about all the different variations and the players that you had to rework and guys that left. And, you know, if you could have kept that group all together for God knows how long, and, you know, we still see the heart of that team still here, many of the key players. And now the Blackhawks are going to be included in this return to play. And I think that has got a lot of people excited. You know, personally, I'm a little upset that they're not bracketing the thing. I really think that works against the Blackhawks, given where they are in the tournament. But, hey, you know, they're certainly capable of surprising Edmonton. And you can't help but be delighted that they're going to be part of this thing.
Yeah, it's an opportunity, right, Molly? I mean, I think most players and the guys that I've talked to, you know, not only with the Blackhawks, but throughout the league, of, you know, teams on the outside looking into the, you know, the so-called normal bubble that we've seen 8-8 on each conference. But look, it's an opportunity, and, you know, you get into a series, and especially a 5-game series, you just don't know with a goaltender, with a difference maker. Now, look, Edmonton's got a couple of difference makers, you know, Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, two of the top, in my opinion, two of the top five players in the league. You put Kaner into the mix, obviously still an elite player in the top five, in my opinion. And, it's up for grabs, really, because of the situation that we're in and of being in a pause for 3+ months, and then getting together in a hub city and playing in a, you know, neutral site, so to speak, and no fans. And you know, you just don't know. So it's an opportunity, and people ask, like, you know, how will I look at this, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, when somebody, hopefully we get to that stage of presenting the Stanley Cup. And so look at, hey, it's the hand that was dealt. We're all facing adversity, and you got to go out and you got to get it done. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for the Hawks or the teams that were maybe on the outside looking in. And it's a great matchup. I mean, it really is. If we get to that point, David and Mully, it's going to be entertaining. And, but if you can get a goaltender, why not us, right? That should be the motto. Why not us?
You know, Eddie, we're sitting here this morning on the anniversary of the Hawks winning their first of three cups in the past decade. They were the team of the decade in the NHL. And when that happens, as we know, the expectations are raised at a level that, frankly, the Hawks have not met in the last couple seasons. They find themselves back in the playoffs, sort of a fluky thing, but they are back there. But they also find themselves in transition. And when they do face the offseason, it will be one where there could be more changes. John McDonough has already been fired. You wonder what's next. How close is this team to a Stanley Cup contender, and how critical is this next offseason in determining that direction?
Well, I think there's a lot there, David, but I think, you know, first and foremost is, you know, for me anyways, I look at it and, you know, where are you, where are we when it comes to, you know, divisional play? Like, this is obviously very unique with, you know, the 2014 tournament, but you just take that aside, and once we get to some sort of normalcy, whenever that is, you know, you look at the top three teams in your division, and those teams, you know, automatically get into the playoffs, and then you're battling for, you know, the two wild cards because you got 8-8 in each conference. So, you know, it's been disappointing. There's no doubt. I mean, the team has said that. You hear it from the players. You heard it from, you know, ownership. You've heard it from the executives, you know, being unacceptable. And, you know, look at change is inevitable. I mean, it really is. And you've seen a lot of change with the Hawks here over the course of the, what, last year and a half, 2 years, obviously with, you know, Joel being out and then John getting, John leaving. And, you know, so you still have, you have guys there that certainly are difference makers. I think where they have fallen on tough times has been the lack of depth, the support, you know, the bottom two lines, you know, the bottom couple of defensemen. I think the goaltending has been, this year the goaltending was, I know it seems like 5 years ago, but I mean, Robin Leonard and Corey Crawford for the stretch of the year, even though the Hawks were where they were and eventually moving Leonard out. I mean, the Hawks got great goaltending, in my opinion, pretty much all season long. They just weren't able to kind of, you know, zig and zag when, you know, in certain situations. So it's a really interesting time because of what has taken place prior, and now you got this opportunity, and then, you know, how do you go moving forward? Because look, we know Father Time is undefeated, and this core is getting a little bit older, but what do you do with Corey Crawford? His contract's up at the end of the year. Those are things that, you know, I'm sure will come to the front of the table here once this season is over. But I still think that they got a core of guys there, David, that you can, you know, build around and give yourself an opportunity. But at the end of the day, is it about, you know, getting in, or is it about winning, or is it about possibly a rebuild? And I think those are questions that will, you know, probably come to the surface here once the season is over.
I mean, let's face it, in professional sports, as you age or as your team changes, you are always kind of on the verge of your career. Are you staying here? Are you leaving? You know, a guy like Crow, this is an opportunity to get yourself locked in. I mean, he goes nuts in the playoffs. The Blackhawks start winning, and he's not going anywhere. And I think you can see that with a lot of different players in different situations as well. This is a really important thing where your career can be changed or solidified with even this sort of a weird dynamic.
Yeah, and I think, too, Molly, maybe with some fans that aren't familiar with, you know, the salary cap in the National Hockey League, I mean, it's a hard salary cap. And, you know, a guy like Corey Crawford, look, I mean, you know, Crow has been unbelievable. I mean, he's two-time Stanley Cup champion. He's been unbelievable. But there comes a point as an organization or as somebody that would be making those decisions is you have to say, look at, we value this player at this number, and you cannot afford to overpay players just because. And that those are decisions that are not easy. But if you're looking to make another run, you say, look, we want you, but this is it's going to be, because you guys know this, is that when the player, when the team has the hammer, they use that to, you know, when they're driving the bus, they use that to the best of their abilities and what have you. And then when the player gets it, and I've lived both sides. I coached in Pittsburgh a handful of years ago, and then obviously as a player. And then when the player gets it, it's like, look at, I have to be realistic and to know, look at, do I want to be a number one goaltender and make less money, or do I want to try to go make more money and be maybe a backup or whatever? What is it about for you at your particular time in your career? But since you brought up Corey Crawford, I mean, that's going to be an interesting dynamic, because he's been here, he's won, he's proven. You know, I don't think, besides the injuries, which, you know, sometimes you just can't help. But when you look at his play this year, it's been pretty damn good. And, you know, he could play for me anytime, but it would have to be at a certain number because of how strict the rules are with the salary cap. So a real interesting dynamic just with that, with Corey Crawford, Molly, moving forward, once we get through this, hopefully get through the rest of the season.
Eddie, if you're a player coming back to play at the end of July, how are you evaluating the health risks in a game that's obviously a contact sport?
Got to trust your doctors, got to trust the medical professionals. And I think if you're going out there, David, I don't say you're worried, because look, we're all in this thing together, really. I mean, when you really think about it, but when you talk about contact sports and whatever, and again, not knowing what, you know, the league and the players are trying to figure out as far as, protection and all that kind of stuff. I think, look at it. And there are players too. And then that's one thing that I've, and there are players in the league that do have some underlying conditions. And, will we have any players that decide, now's not the time for me, right? And you have to take that into consideration. And I think we all have to respect that if somebody does. And look, people could have underlying conditions, and you're speaking to a guy that, had a tumor the size of my fist growing inside me for almost 7 or 8 months before I realized that I had stage 3 colon cancer, So, I mean, we don't know. I mean, we all like to think we're healthy. I think that that's certainly playing on the minds of at least hockey players in my little world, that, we're in that situation of the unknown. But I think once guys get back and get into the norm, I think it'll be different with no fans, but I think most guys will just go out there and you just start playing, and hopefully it could be safe. And I know that's the first priority of the National Hockey League, is to make sure it's as safe as it can be. But, we've seen it in college football and, with Alabama having a bunch of guys and, coming down with the virus and what have you. So it's just inevitable it's going to hit, other sports once they come back.
Eddie, thanks for your time. You got a pick for the Belmont? I can't believe the Belmont is the first. Plenty of time.
Yeah, you guys can call me next Friday, the day before. I'll have a better idea. But one horse I am looking at that might be running will be a horse by the name of Dr. Post. Actually,
yeah.
Dr. Post is a horse that might be a horse you want to use on your tickets. Might get a maybe about 8 or 10 to 1 as far as a long shot. So keep that on the docket.
That's
the best,
nice,
Eddie.
Yeah,
thanks a lot.
Very good, Eddie. Thank you, buddy.
Hey, great to be with you guys. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Had to tap into that. Are you kidding me, David? I mean, what are you going to do? Tis the law that I will ask that question.
Early, Dr. Post.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the second favorite, according to the stakes I'm looking at right now. Tis the law at 3-2. And Dr. Post, 9-1. Mischievous Alex, 10-1. Tap it to win. 12-1. So there you go. That's just
always
an early
great
look. Eddie
always
will know
great
more.
Talking to Eddie.
Oh, yeah. God, I love talking to Eddie. He's a great man. 312-644-6767. Mullion Haw on the score.
They didn't go get Foles for him to sit. And that's the way I look at it. Listen, I think the best man's going to win, obviously. And the one thing with Nagy, I think he's such an offensive genius. I wouldn't be shocked to see them both at times. But I don't love that system. I like when you decide who it is. And that's who it is. But we have a Super Bowl winning quarterback now. And we also have a very young quarterback, right? And so you would think the Super Bowl winning quarterback will probably get the nod, and the other young kid will get the teach.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's Doc Rivers. He was on a podcast a couple days ago talking about one of his favorite teams, the Bears. Grew up a Bears fan, and he's telling you what he thinks about the starting quarterback job. He didn't bring in Nick Foles to sit around, and Mitch gets the teach before he gets the hook. I don't know, before he gets the boot, because they didn't pick up his option. So I don't know, you want to teach him a year and then kind of lowball him? How does that work, David? How does the teach work?
Well, Doc Rivers knows championship chemistry, and he knows what it takes to win a title. And if he says that Nick Foles is your starter, I don't think that should be ignored. This is the guy who talked to the team via Zoom last week, 2 weeks ago. I'm going with Doc Rivers. I don't know about you guys, but yeah, Mitch's future is in balance. He can determine that this season if he does have a good one, if he does have a relevant one. I just don't know if he's going to be in a position to if everything goes according to the Bears' plan, I don't know if the best plan calls for him to contribute much at all, because you went out and you got yourself a quarterback that in a perfect world is your starter and leads you to the playoffs and a deep run in those playoffs. So that guy is Nick Foles. Mitch Trubisky, if he plays and he plays well, let's worry about debating his future later. We haven't even heard how he thinks about the offseason
because
we have yet to hear from him yet.
He's all fired up. I mean, Mitch is really confident, so we're told, and he is really excited about this competition, so they say. So I don't know why you would think that he's not understanding of everything about the situation he's in and not just grabbing that ring and ready to rumble. I mean, Mitch is ready to go, so we're told.
I'm glad that we have heard from the Clippers head coach on the Bears quarterback situation before we have heard from the incumbent quarterback from the Bears on the quarterback situation.
Well, he's very excited to have not gotten that contract, and he gets it. He understands. I told you. I remember going in one day, and they had signed some quarterback or something, and Moon asked Dave Wannstedt, hey, how did Shane take it? Meaning Shane Matthews. And Dave, totally distraught. But he was like, Shane knows. And I just started laughing at myself. Like, what does he know? That he's no good? Is that?
Mitch gets it.
Oh, Mitch gets it. Mitch knows he's useless.
Until further notice. Yeah. Sounds like there could be. The reports yesterday was there going to be potentially more people getting into the buildings around NFL facilities. You wonder, is there going to be a possibility of any sort of organized team activities in person before the beginning of training camp? Because that is when we talk about the situation, you know, in any competition, any open competition. Mm. The guy who knows the players and knows the teammates and knows the terrain as well as, you know, Mitch Trubisky does, that gives him the one advantage I think he does have in that, you know, he's not going to be introducing himself to anybody on the first day of training camp, potentially, as Nick Foles will have to, because that's the first time he will be, you know, in the company of his new teammates. And Mitch has been here all summer, presumably. We saw him in the city of Chicago over the weekend, helping out in a community effort and a community activity, and good for him. But Nick Foles is not here, and you wonder what kind of impact that will have. So if they soften the restrictions and teams can start to welcome players back onto their facilities, I don't know if that's for sure yet, but that would definitely even the playing field a little bit, I think, in terms of just giving everybody the same set of circumstances.
I agree with you, David. I think that Mitch's great advantage is that he knows the building. He's been wandering around it for many a year, and now Nick Foles could potentially get lost in a hallway, could be late for a meeting. That could lead to problems. I mean, that is Mitch's greatest chance.
Well, Mitch knows where they hide the remotes, so he can turn off the televisions if necessary. Nick Foles does not have that access yet, so we do know that's an advantage.
Yeah, some of these cable setups are difficult these days. You got all these remotes, you know, some you're trying to turn this on, you're trying to turn this off.
It's true. It's hard.
I get it.
Yeah.
As somebody who subscribes to Acorn TV, you're not kidding.
Is that for little kids, Acorn TV?
No, actually, it's got BBC series on it. It has a variety of stations and channels and options that I don't really know that I'm taking full advantage of, because it's hard enough to get it to the right channel to find out how to access Acorn TV, the best British TV dramas, comedies, and more.
What about Teapot TV? Does that work for you too?
What's Teapot?
I just made it up. It sounds like as good a name as Acorn. I think you made up Acorn is what I'm telling you.
No, Acorn is actually a thing. It's a thing. You can subscribe. I don't think you can watch the Cubs.
For Sprouts?
No, Marquee is not available on Acorn TV. Acorn is definitely British TV and BBC series. And I would recommend several. We just got done with a very dark BBC drama series called Blood. And boy, I mean, there wasn't like one happy moment in two seasons of Blood. 12
episodes. It's called Blood. What were you expecting?
Exactly.
Well, it included an actor that we really liked from previous series, Line of Duty. That was the...
Saw that.
That's excellent. That's an excellent series. Well done. And Adrian Dunbar was the lead detective in Line of Duty, and he is the lead character in Blood. So we thought, okay, this is a very good actor. And it was very well acted, but 12 episodes, two seasons, and I don't think that there was any reason to smile for any of the 12 episodes once. There wasn't a happy scene in any of them. It was like dark, dark, dark.
I'm trying to get the kids to watch Exploratory Surgery with me, but so far no takers.
Yeah, right. Well, keep probing.
Yeah. Blood just seems, I'm with Kevin, it just seems like the sort of thing, even if you like the actor, I'm not tuning in for laughs, right? I mean, goings on in an emergency room setting.
Way it sounds. It's not real gore. It wasn't gory at all. Okay. It wasn't anything. I would not watch something like that necessarily. It was just really a dramatic kind of tracing a family. You would like it. It was an Irish family. There was a lot of grudges. A lot of history.
Yep.
It was very well acted. Just was not a big fan overall.
Yeah. Gory would be a good name for a TV series. That might chase you off a little bit, right?
Or a TV night network, like Gory TV. Gory TV.
Yeah, I don't. I'm deciding whether to watch. I want to start getting into something. I'm deciding between Grizzly and Gruesome. I just can't decide which one to watch.
What is your anticipation level for the ESPN documentary on Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire? And the name escapes me.
I'm not nearly.
No, we're not really going to get much into that.
Yeah, I'm not nearly as excited for that as I was for I forget the name of the series. What was the name?
Last Dance.
The Last Dance. Yeah, The Last Dance was more appealing to me. I think of that summer, and I think of that chase. And I remember I was at that stage on the sports writers on TV, and I can remember sitting and having a conversation with these guys. You know, these are the gentlemen sports writers and cigar smoking sports writers, and talking about the fact that Mark McGuire had Andrew Steen Dion in his locker, which kind of, you know, metastasizes in the body like a steroid, and they were just dismissive of the idea that a steroid would be of any aid to a baseball player, because round ball, round bat, it's the hardest thing to do in sports, and it doesn't matter if you can lift weights or if you work out or if your body shape has changed. It's irrelevant to what the skill involved is. And I think that was kind of a general feeling at the time, believe it or not, during the steroid era, and now what we know of it in retrospect, it's just not as glorious a moment by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, I was not looking forward to watching it that much, and then yesterday, this is one of those days where I kind of do miss a transition here, because Dan Bernstein tweeted this about Long Gone Summer. Watched Long Gone Summer. It's excellent and unflinching. Both Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame, and I think this film could spur both that and a Sosa reconciliation with the Cubs. Wow. So that makes me want to watch it. That makes me kind of curious about what is involved or included in this documentary that would sway somebody to that degree where they now are suggesting they belong in the Hall of Fame and that they reconcile with the Cubs, because Sosa and the Cubs, that is a relationship that is, you know, needs to be repaired and is an issue. And
does it need to be repaired?
Well, I don't know if it needs to be repaired. But it's certainly one that is in disrepair.
Yes, but that's because they want him to take responsibility for everything that he was involved in, and he's unwilling to. And Mark McGwire has done that and has been back in baseball as a result of it. So I think that, I don't know. I'll watch it. I mean, I'm dutiful, if nothing else. I will definitely watch it. And if I come away with the same feeling that that Dan has, I will let you know. But I think I'll be watching it more out of duty than out of seeking information or pleasure.
Well, I was once in St. Louis on assignment to cover the naming of the Mark McGwire Expressway. And I think they were going to take his name off an expressway in St. Louis because of the scandal that he was embroiled in. And I'm curious to see how he comes across in this. And now I'm more curious to see how Sammy Sosa, who we don't hear from very often, comes across in this. It'd be good TV.
Dustin's still bowing. We'll bring in Dan Kantrovitz next. We'll talk about the Cubs draft prospects. Mully and Haw on the Score.
No doubt it's more challenging this year than it's ever been. But we've always been faced with trying to compare players with varying degrees of data, varying amounts of data, and this year it's just a little more extreme.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're delighted to welcome in Cubs Vice President of Scouting, Dan Kantrovitz. He joins us on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline, Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Morning, Dan.
Morning, guys. How are you?
We're all fired up. We're really excited to have something to talk about. It's going to be great to have good news in baseball, and that's what a draft is. You know, it's the future. It represents guys that you get to know a little bit on this day, and then you get to know very well when they eventually graduate to the major leagues. How pumped up are you running this thing?
That's a good way of putting it. I'm really pumped up. I think our whole department is, and, you know, once we got word from Major League Baseball that the draft was going to happen a few months ago, I think, you know, that just sort of galvanized the whole group. And it's been sort of an all hands on deck effort from, you know, everybody throughout the organization. So yeah, we're excited.
What did you learn, Dan, from contacting NFL teams, if I read correctly, just on how to handle some of the logistical challenges that exist, given the fact that there's still social distancing, there's still a lot of things that make this an unusual experience?
Yeah, so we reached out to some of the NFL teams because we had some connections internally with a few of them. And, you know, I think that they had more experience dealing with players remotely, frankly, than we had on the baseball side. And so, you know, one of the things that I wanted to just pick their brain about was, you know, how are they sort of getting beyond these just generic, you know, Q&A sessions? You know, if you only have 30, 45 minutes with a player, how are you actually just – you know, coming away from that call with something actionable, some intelligence, just some information about the player, kind of above and beyond, you know, just some generic Q&A session. And, you know, one of the things that they do is, you know, they break down video, you know, whether it's game film or practice film, and, you know, ask players about different reads, formations. And I think you get a lot of insight into, or at least they get a lot of insight into players and their thought process. And, you know, it's establishing some common ground, but it's also something you really can't prepare for. If you're a player, you're either, you know, sort of trained and think a certain way, or you're not. And so, you know, we thought that maybe it would be useful to do something similar with baseball players and, you know, put up some game video, perhaps maybe show a game or an instance where they had to make an adjustment at the plate, or if they're a pitcher on the mound, and have them kind of talk through that process. And it was really insightful and really interesting. And, you know, it's a different level of preparation. You have to, you know, go through a lot of film and figure out the right at bats and the right questions to ask. But at the end of the day, it was great. And I think it was really productive.
Do you feel you have enough information on these guys? Would you know more had it been a normal college season, a normal high school season? So many of these, truncated seasons really got in the way.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think there's cases where high school players weren't even able to get out on the field, and that's unusual, and that's something that we haven't had to deal with, and you have to try to piece things together and rely on looks maybe in the fall or sometimes even in the summer from last summer. But, you know, for the most part, most players were able to get out on the field, and it's an exceptional case if they weren't. But every year there's imperfect information about these guys. And I think now that's more true than ever. But, you know, in the same vein, you know, we had more access to these guys this year, and we're able to get on a Zoom call with them and speak with them. And that's something that in a normal year we wouldn't have been able to do, because, you know, they're tied up with their college season or their high school season, and, you know, we're not bothering them during that time. So, you know, I think there was a trade-off, but no doubt there was, you know, there's some information that, you know, we'd like to have on some of these players this year that we're just not going to get.
What was the purpose served by including the director of hitting, Justin Stone, and the director of pitching, Casey Jacobson, in some of these conversations and some of these Zoom calls and some of the research? And is that a new thing, because these are sort of new roles that Theo has sort of implemented with the Cubs?
Right. So Justin Stone, our director of hitting, and Craig Breslow, our director of pitching, they're instrumental to these players the moment that we draft or sign them. So once we pass the baton to player development and actually sign them, you know, the scouts, you know, we kind of take a back seat and start to focus on next year's draft. And, you know, we hand these guys over to our player development staff. And so I think our thinking was, you know, why not get a head start on that? Why not kind of ease that transition and let these players speak to both Brez and Stoney, depending on if they're a hitter or pitcher, and frankly, let Brez and Stoney, you know, help us in this process where we're trying to sift through players and evaluate them and try to figure out what adjustments they might make that, you know, could enable them to improve. And, you know, they have a lot of experience in those areas. And I think just working together in that sense, you know, just provides a more information for us to ultimately make a decision.
Do you have to do any sort of different preparation in terms of just knowing that there's going to be a lot of guys available as free agents? You know, that this is such a short draft, such a small sample size versus the usual size of draft, that there will be all sorts of players that you might normally have been able to get later on that will maybe be on the free agent market, and it's a limited amount of money. Do you have to make connections with players like that?
Yeah. So whether or not a player is eligible to sign after the draft with us, it's a different question, whether or not they would want to sign with the team. And I think, you know, these players are going to have options. I think because of the truncated college season, for example, the players that, you know, were, say, that were graduating or were, you know, 4-year seniors, they have the option to go back to college. So I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of players that are eligible to sign that may decide, you know, look, I didn't get my fill in college. We had a shortened season. I still have something to prove, or I just enjoy the college experience, or for one reason or another, they, you know, decide to go back. So I think at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of players that just have more options than normal. And, you know, I think what our challenge is going to be is to, one, identify the players that are eligible to sign, and two, identify the group of players that that want to sign after the draft. Because it's, like I said, a lot of these players are going to have the option to either sign with us or go back to school. And I think, you know, so does it help us to establish relationships with these players now, you know, before they're eligible to sign as free agents after the draft? Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we've tried to do throughout these Zoom calls, not just speak with potential draftees, but also kind of broaden our horizons and speak with players that may be eligible to sign with us after the draft. But I think right now the challenging part is you don't know who's going to want to sign after the draft. And you know, I think, frankly, a lot of the players themselves don't know if they would want to sign after the draft, you know, because they're going to have these different options, whether it's to sign with one of the 30 teams, whether it's to go back to school, in some cases, whether it's to transfer schools and go play somewhere else. So, you know, in the same way that it's a really new experience for us, it's a new experience for these kids. And I think, you know, we're trying to feel our way through this process in the same way that they are. So that's definitely an added wrinkle this year. But I think we've done a lot to try to prepare for that process and put us in position to sign as many of those players as possible.
Because there's only five rounds, will these picks receive any more scrutiny, and will these prospects be under any more pressure because you can only focus on the guys that you draft here and there won't be as big of a group as previous drafts?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, I think it changes our process in terms of how we're talking about players. And, you know, we're going to go from having maybe 1,000 players on our draft board to, say, 150. So it really changes the process, our process going into the draft. I don't know if it necessarily changes sort of if it adds any pressure to these players or, you know, any different than a, I don't know if the fourth rounder this year is going to feel any added pressure compared to the fourth rounder and past years.
Dan, thanks a ton. Really appreciate your time and really looking forward to tomorrow. Best of luck.
Good luck, Dan.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Take care.
That is the Cubs Vice President of Scouting, Dan Kantrovitz. They, of course, pick 16th, and it should be a good one to monitor. I love what he was saying about talking to the players and picking their brains a little bit differently after talking to the NFL teams. Really interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they reached out to the NFL teams as well because they took advantage of their contacts, and it's a whole new ball game this year just because of the circumstances surrounding the draft. Five rounds and such a weird set of he's been in Oakland for a lot of this pandemic because he's making the move over here, and logistically challenging, and still just the regular pressure that comes with every amateur draft.
All right, we want to thank everyone connected to the program. Thanks for calling and texting and emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening.
Yeah, it means a lot to us. Our thanks to our executive producer, Dustin Rhodes.
Why?
It's just tradition, really. And Kevin, we even thank him.
Why?
Yeah, it's a really excellent question. Ray, though. Bless you,
yes.
Ray. Yes. Thanks, Ray. David, have yourself a glorious day.
Have a good day, Mully.
All right, pal. We'll talk to you tomorrow. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
End the story.
I see you soon, baby.
If it is to be said, so it be. So it is.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.